family. So thank you for sharing that. Our guest speaker today is Jamie Gilliland. Jamie was born in Billingsley, Alabama, and the people of Billingsley, Jamie says, call the area God's country, mainly because he's the only one that knows where it is. He grew up on a farm, went to the University of Alabama, where he completed a Bachelor's of Science in Business. We've forgiven him of that degree and his lineage here in Louisiana. But after serving for 3 years on staff for Baptist Collegiate Ministries in Florida and Louisiana, he went to New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary, where he completed his MDiv. Jamie served as a recruiter for the seminary, where he met and recruited his wife, Sandy. They married and moved to Oklahoma, where Jamie served as the BCM director at Rogers State University for 9 years. In those 9 years, they had two sons, Micah and Thomas, bought their first home. Jamie published his first book, and Sandy finished her PhD. Very busy times. 5 years ago, they came back to Louisiana to serve as missions coordinator for Louisiana and campus minister at LSUA. They're also members here at First Baptist Pineville, and Sandy leads our counseling ministry here, and we're grateful that they're a part of our ministry. So please welcome Jamie Gilliland.
All right, thank you so much, Stuart, for allowing me to come up here. There's this old saying that a microphone is kind of like a gun. You never give it to someone until you know how they're going to use it. And so I've been around long enough that I'm very surprised they gave me a microphone. So I love what I do. I'm a college minister. And as I was telling someone earlier, if you see me in a suit, I wear a suit for typically two occasions, and that's to marry and bury. And if you see me in a suit, that means something really wonderful is happening or really terrible. So, if you see me running in a suit, try to outrun me. So it's at your behest. You've got a few things on your table. You got my business card. If you want anything from me or want to do a background check and say, let's never have that guy back again, there you go. And we also have just something fun for you, generations at a glance, a little generational chart there. If you want to know where you are in the birth order, you can. There's so many of them, the years change. But the reason why I put that out there is because I'm talking about working with college students and next generation. Next generation is a broad category to say young people, somewhere between a mix of millennial and iGen. The millennials are kind of out of college now and or transitioning out, where they should have been out of college unless they're in their doctoral programs. But we do have a couple of fifth-year seniors that we're trying to graduate as quickly as possible. But the generation we're working with right now is this iGen, and I enjoy working with them. And the last thing, it says GOLA up there. I'll tell you a little bit about what I do as a campus minister. Campus ministers are a lot of things. We are ping pong players. We are theologians and ministers and teachers. I'm a campus chaplain. When things are going really well and we have civic leader lunches and stuff like that, they ask me to come and pray and be part of that, faculty convocation, graduation, those kind of things. And I love doing that. But also when we have something happens on campus, we've had deaths on campus or students who have died off campus, and we kind of we minister with students through that process and faculty, and also occasionally as students are in this thing, this academic decathlon where they're taking, you know, things like kinesiology alongside biology, which is alongside underwater basket weaving kind of things, you know, just these crazy things, and they're getting tested on the oddest of things. We help walk with them through this process and say, okay, in the midst of this, don't forget to get a spiritual education as well. Process, what does this mean in your life? Don't become so compartmentalized that this is my business world, this is my family world, this is my faith world, and never the group shall meet. We like to have them help them process how to integrate multiple things into their lives, because they're also asking these wonderful questions right now, because of girls between the ages of 16 and 19 in normal development, the reasoning part of their brain is starting to wake up. And they're stopping asking the questions, what do I do? And they're starting to answer the question, to ask the question, why do I do it? And it's an amazing time of life. And guys start early, it's usually 18, and run on to 21, 22. We're a little bit behind the eight ball on that one. But that being said, we guys do the same thing. And that's why you also see a graduation from church in this age. When they graduate from high school, they have a transition, their authority structure falls away, and then they start processing, why did I do all that anyway? And so that's being based on campus, that's what we do, is we visit with the students, we spend time with the students, we have these things called gospel appointments, that when we meet a student, we set up interviews and meetings and those kind of things. And so they'll sit there and they'll say, I've heard this is an objection to faith, or this is as I've read this book in this area, it seems to confront the faith that I have. And part of that process is saying, well, the faith belief that you had, was that true? Was that biblical? Or was that something constructed from a younger mind that you heard this when you were 12, you processed it, you believed it till you were 17, and then your mind has now expanded again and grown, and you're ready to process more things. It probably wasn't completely true when you were 12. That's just how you heard it. And so now it's time to grow up some more. And then, of course, we know that when they get older, they'll get married and have kids, and they'll need to grow up some more and to reprocess these things. And so this is a stage of life where we are with them. I'm also 45 now. I've never been 45 before in my life, so that's exciting. That being said, I'm at that phase of life where students don't see me as, like, you know, when I was younger, they saw me as that, like, that big brother kind of guy, not in the weird, creepy, you know, 60s movies kind of way, but that guy we can go hang out with. And then I was in my 30s. Now I'm the weird uncle that comes and spends time with you. But now they're kind of seeing me in that dad phase of life, which is kind of weird for me. I had a student come up and he said, you know, you're kind of like the dad I never had. And I wanted to say, you know, I really do feel that is completely not the case. You don't understand, you know, how I interact with my children, and if you were my kid, I would have smothered you with a pillow many years ago. But that being said, I love you, and I'm going to spend time with you and mentor you with you through some things. But this next generation coming in, I mean, you work with them. They're in your worker field, and there's some things that are triggers for them. And the other thing that I do is I work with college mission teams throughout the summers. We send them we have Christmas in China, Christmas in Chinatown. It used to be Christmas in China. What we found is it's as much or even better a deal if we do Christmas in Chinatown. So in New York and LA, we send our students to work with Chinese people, culturally Chinese people in New York and LA over Christmas, and to do ministry in those areas. We also still have Christmas in China where students do an exchange program and go overseas. But students go all over the world to do mission work. And so we help them get there. They also travel all over the country doing a program called Innovators, where we help get them jobs throughout the country. We've had camps in Alaska, Hawaii, in Orlando, and these kind of locations where students can go off and get some work experience. Because they've got a head full of theory, but not a whole lot of head full of experience. And they need to go off, get away, earn some money, make mistakes, have successes, and come back and then bring them in. But the last group is we do a vacation Bible school team. We send college students to churches for free to help the church put on a vacation Bible school. Now, these teams are somewhere between 6 and 8 students, and they spend 6 weeks living together in the sense that we put them in hotels. We give them a vehicle, we pay them, we cover every expense that they have, and we say, you go, and they usually have 1 to 2 churches a day, and to where they're doing those things. And it's amazing the experiences that they have, because a lot of them have never been away from home. And so year after year, we have these wonderful things that happen. And so we put together after this past summer, a presentation for some people, because what we found out is the needs of this current generation are not readily or not on the forefront of the minds of some other folks. So we're going to go through as briefly as I can after I got through with a 5-minute intro about some topics here. We're going to talk about, for this next generation, safety, physical space, politics, current events, and relevance. So I want to equally offend everyone right here, and as we go through these things. But So anyway, safety concerns. This generation has a high need for safety. They did not experience 9/11, which blows my mind. They didn't know where they were. Some of them were in the womb. Some of them weren't here yet before 9/11. And so they have no memory whatsoever. So 9/11 for me is my dad's memory of Pearl Harbor. And so I understand Pearl Harbor in an academic sense, and that's it. There's no emotional connection that I have with it. And so these kids don't know that, but they grew up with the effects of it. And so safety is a huge concern. So when I'm putting teams together, we have to have a safety protocol, a safety plan in place. And when things don't go the way that they should, we had a team this summer. They had a situation to where they felt not safe in an environment. And so we had to follow some fairly important things. One is we had to make sure that we didn't underreact. Because this generation, whether they're workers for you, they're at a teller position, whether they're at a cashier, whether they're in a cook position, whatever the thing is, if a student from this generation brings a concern to you, it's very important that you listen to that concern and you don't dismiss it. Because when you dismiss the concern, and it may not be that legitimate, to be honest with you, it may not. I didn't think this one was, that they thought was a concern. But the most important thing there is not to underreact. If they bring forward that, for example, we had a student in this situation, they had someone who was older, who thought they were funnier than what they are, and told some jokes around them at a little bitty church in the middle of nowhere, and they thought it was hilarious. And the whole group was completely offended by it. And then everything that happened from there on was processed through the lens of that experience. And so when this person came over and tapped a girl on the shoulder, she was ready to scream sexual harassment. When this person came over and just walked by, and there was a guy standing there, and he said, "Oh, you got to watch how these people talk about you," you know, that kind of thing, and joked and walked off. They processed that through the lens of this is a creepy person. And so as we went in and we told them, we said, "Well, what has actually happened that's happened wrong?" Nothing. And we went through and we helped them process their emotions. Because in this generation, what I think we'll be processing more than anything else in coaching is how they feel about something. Not the actual legitimate concern that's there. If you don't have an actual assault or an actual instance that where something is going wrong, you're helping someone process their feelings about something. And you may think this, and I know it frustrates me to have to shut things down and help someone process their emotions, but that is my job. As a leader, as someone in the group, because I can assure you, they will quit within a week if they do not feel heard. And that's kind of where you're going. You're trying to help them feel heard. And so not, from our perspective, we need to make sure we don't underreact. But the other side is we need to make sure we don't overreact. I had another team leader call me, and he said, "Hey, my student on the field, they just experienced this thing. She said she just got into an argument with this other person on the field. Man, I'm ready to call him and tell her parents to pick him up and bring him out." And so I called the person on the field. I sat down with him. That's what I do. I go to the location and I interview and I sit down and we have a form filled out. We have a process. And come to find out, she was blaming the person she had an argument with in advance because she wanted him to get the blame of it before he had a chance to complain. And so we found out that it was a whole blown out of proportion moment. And so it was important for me not to overreact, not to go in guns blazing. Because I could walk in and fire him if I wanted to. That's the situation. But to understand and also to coach this person through it. Now, I have a perspective of I'm trying to disciple college students through a tough summer. But now your perspective as boss, wherever you may be, if you want to keep that person, you may need to coach them through these moments. I find it's important to do visible changes in those moments. This student group who felt threatened by this other person, we moved their hotel. We just called up one hotel. We canceled reservations for the next few nights here. We moved them to another hotel. And they all of a sudden, they felt fine. Didn't cost us a dime to do that. We had another group of, I have two girls that live in our building on our campus, and they felt they had a stalker. They didn't have a stalker, but they felt they had a stalker. And so we found a $50 Amazon deal web-based camera, mounted it, plugged it in, and so for $50, and that took care of everything. And just the visible representation of a camera being there. We also upgraded some locks on the apartment doors and stuff like that. That cost me, I think, about $15 at Lowe's, kind of things like that. We let them have some visible changes, didn't minimize, and also didn't overreact because the student, while creepy and awkward, which a lot of students are, in those moments, this student hadn't done anything wrong. And lastly, keeping the person in the loop as much as ethically possible. When you do have a real situation where you're dealing with someone and you are having to work around, you don't want someone branded. I remember from my college days that if you ever got in the creepy category, you're there. You're just stuck there, right? It's tough. And so we tried to avoid the labels, trying to get those labels to stick. So, but safety is such a huge concern to these students. Physical space. This is interpersonal space. I am weirdly guarded about this stuff. I'm a non-toucher. I don't like hugs. I certainly don't like shoulder rubs, those kind of things. When people walk up behind me, well, this is a great example. My wife bought me, she said, look, it's a massage thing for an hour massage, because I know you've been tense lately. And she handed it to me, and I said, I just got tenser. You're showing me this has freaking me out right now. And I told her, I need to hit the gym by myself, and I'm fine. Congratulations, you just bought yourself a massage, you know, kind of thing. But when it comes to students, there is no physical touch that is safe in this iGen student group coming up. With the students that were on the field this year, they had the person get into this person's story, because I sat down and talked to them. This person had three daughters, all college age, and this is a hugging person. And he loved to hang around college students. And so he saw these girls on this team, and he felt like they were like daughters. And I had to tell him, and it was hard for him. I said, you can't get within 2 feet of any of these girls. And I said, here's why. Because you want to touch. And you want to reach out. When you want to make a really good, funny comment, you want to reach out and touch their shoulder. I said, you're in the creepy category now. I'm very sorry. I said, but there is nothing you can do that won't be mistranslated in this. So you can't touch them ever again. And that's not a threat or anything weird like that. I said, but it's just one of those things. You just got to realize that's your reality. And I do not touch college students. And if a girl wants to come up for a hug, they get the side. You know, good job, kind of thing. And here's the thing. It's not safe to touch guys either. Guy-on-guy touch is not safe anymore. We've had so much of those kind of things, especially when you deal with transgendered issues. How do you do housing? We're going to Atlanta for a conference and having to stay in hotels, which is my nightmare, because we're housing guys and girls. Girls in girls' rooms, guys in guys' rooms, but that's not a safe thing anymore. I would much rather have a gym, an open space, where everybody sees everybody, kind of a thing. Separate bathrooms, of course, but that's about the safest environment you can have these days. But physical touch is a big thing. It's so easy to misinterpret. And just assume that everybody's got a big bubble. And that's really hard. Again, my wife is a toucher. But that's fine. We're married. Nobody else. Okay. Texting and media. My recommendation, students this generation communicate through social media more than anyone else. I would suggest that you keep your social media interaction with anyone from this iGeneration to emails only. Why? Because emails are documentable, because that's something that can be researched. I can tell you, my generation, and this drives me crazy, so many people that I work with will say, I never got that email. Yeah, they did. And one of the great things about where I work is we document every email. So we've trained them out of saying that, but college students, I don't know if you know this, college students lie. okay? It's a shocker, right? They lie. I can't tell you that there is a rash of deaths that happen around midterms and finals of grandparents. I mean, grandparents are dropping like flies in midterms and finals. You know, I can't turn in the paper this weekend. My Nana died. You know, again? Yeah, and that kind of, the internet goes out on turn-in test day kind of thing. You know, those kind of things. And so just understand, students lie. It needs to be part of the system. And stick to a system that is documentable over time. And I would not change that for anyone, even my bosses. Whenever there's something of importance, I email it, and it drives them crazy because it puts those thoughts there. Also personal information. You have to be a guard on other people's personal information. You cannot hand it out. You cannot give out anyone else's phone number anymore. You can't say, oh, yeah, I'll just send you that contact. That for college students, that's an invasion of privacy. For these young students today to give out their personal contact information. It's weird, it's sad, it's not my thing. My personal cell phone is on those cards. You can call me. And if it's just to sit there and bug me, I will punish you by talking back to you for the next hour. And then I'll call you back. but that being said, these students don't feel that way. They feel like this is their own little personal world, and to be separated from it is a violation. So politics and current events, this is the fun one. This next generation, the millennials, by the way, millennials are the one that's driving a lot of the opposition that you're seeing right now. This iGen is not as much into that, but they are very sympathetic to oppressed people groups, and I don't see that that's a bad thing. Their views on Black Lives Matter, immigration reform, yes, Calvinism, I put Calvinism in this list. Elections, Pledge of Allegiance, how all that meshes out. There are so many people who are looking for an argument. And I don't know if you're anyone a Star Wars fan? Anyone has seen Star Wars? This is a big, giant, fish-headed thing that's famous for saying it's a trap, right? Whenever someone asks me about any of these topics, that's what I hear in my head. It's a trap! You know, don't, whatever the case may be, when someone asks me that question on that, listen, I'm not involved in any of these arguments right here. There is nothing that I do that really is in the midst of this. Something you may do, maybe, I don't know. But I do not plant a flag on any one of these. I'll sit down, because my goal is to help lead a college student to Christ. I'll just sit down and say, well, how do you feel about that? And have them talk and talk and talk. And where did that come from? Yeah, what do you think? Okay, that's very interesting. And then after it's all, now what does this mean for accepting the gospel of Jesus Christ? You know, that's where I want to go to. And so I just recommend for people who are leaders who have a lot of consequence involved, because college students can argue about this till the day is long and it won't affect them one bit. But for me, one Twitter post and I am just skewered in social media. And so I have to stay away from it. And they will ruin an entire year for me of recruiting college students for missions because I said an errant comment based on something. And so they asked me about when they came to the endorsement of Nike by someone and that kind of thing. And I said, I'm a New Balance guy. That was my response. And I said, I don't care. Corporation selects their personnel or anything like that. Don't care. It's not my life. And then we move on from there. So that's my recommendation. Ephesians 4:29, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. And I am a big fan of just staying out of the weeds on that. And lastly, relevance. Is it lastly? Yes. Connect. When it comes to connecting over humor, I love connecting with students over humor, but it always needs to be self-deprecating in this generation. Like, take shots at yourself. Everybody else is off limits. Cliche and generalizations, just stay away from them. This is such a fiercely independent college student to say something cliche. Oh, you're from here. You must this, that, or the other. They get offended quick because it's not that it doesn't represent them. This generation resents being figured out. And everybody's the same in a lot of areas. Everybody's a sinner, you know, saved by grace. If you have accepted Jesus, you're a sinner saved by grace. The only thing I ever brought to salvation was the sin, and that's it. And that's where I connect with students over. And so in the midst of that, I let them feel that we're in a discovery process. I could know their mom, their aunt, their grandparents, and know all about their life, but give them the opportunity to feel that you're discovering who they are from their perspective. And I think what you'll find is they become loyal. And they'll become a huge advocate for you, and that's how, and how to gain respect is consistency. Be consistent and be healthy over time with amazing boundaries. Those boundaries are for space. When they're gone, you don't need to text. If they're texting you like every 15, 20 minutes to get your approval on something, you need some boundaries there. You need to get some separation between the two of you, because they're wanting more from you than what God designed for you to give. And lastly, depth is never wrong. This was for pastors. A lot of when our speakers come in and they come and talk to a college group, they're going to talk about dating. They're going to talk about preparing for a test and that kind of thing. And college students are like, yes, we know we live this life. We know we prepare for tests and those kind of things. But in the end, what they want is they want depth. They really respond to exegetical preaching on that sort of thing, if you know what that is. We had an amazingly entertaining speaker this summer at a huge conference, and I mean, we spent half the time laughing or crying, and it was great, and we all walked away. And then another speaker came up and just did about, he did this sermon on a passage, and the students walked away saying, we need more of that. Because they just got in and just really got really deep into the passage and context and language, and the students craved it. And I was surprised. I actually like the other person. I don't know what that says about me. Apparently, I don't have a lot of depth. But in the midst of that, it really did challenge us. And so I was very excited to see that. It gave me a lot of hope. And I think the last thing that I'm going to mention about this generation, I want to give you a really positive, I want to leave with a positive impact of that, because listen, Generation X is my generation, and I don't ever want to work with my generation, having grown up in it, because we were a bunch of jerks. But I really got to like the millennials. But this next generation coming in, this iGen, they're 25% of the world's population, and they drink less, drive more, and abstain from sex longer than anybody else in the four generations previous to them, and that says they've got some really good things coming through. They're seeing some consequences, and they're acting in some fairly responsible ways. And I'm very encouraged about this generation. And they're workers. They're showing up to volunteer and to work. They're the ones who will show up to stack chairs and not ask you just to speak. And if you don't give them the microphone, they walk out the door. They're there. They'll stack chairs for you for a while. So I'm very encouraged about this generation. I actually like them a lot. I hope that it works out for you. But anyway, if there's any questions that we have at this time, I don't know if we set that up, but.
So let me ask you this one.
Yeah.
I'm a baby boomer. Any baby boomers there? Okay. I wasn't pampered like that, feelings and all that. Mm. Get out there and do it and good luck and have fun and whatever. But how did they transition? Because I look at that as, to a workplace that doesn't really care, about what you've been doing with them. How does that transition now? Are they prepared for that,
No, they're not. it is.
I don't want to leave school for the rest of my life. I'd want to be there forever.
I've told students many times that you need to know that your employer is not there to help you realize your dreams. You're there to fulfill a function and a role. And so that's one thing. So they do need to wake up. It takes a lot of relationship to hear tough words, though. And so the responsibility in on us is to develop the relationship. Get close. So whenever we say something, they'll hear the something. And they don't just process it through, well, that person's out of touch, that person's mean, or what. There's so many college students who really do believe that their professors have it in for them. Like, my professor hates me. Why? Because I told her that, my paper was late and I just needed to turn it a day late. And they said, no, they just have it in for me. No. They're an academic, and they have absolute standards. And if you turn it in late, then 45 other people will turn it in late, and you ruin their weekend. you know, kind of a thing, and helping them process some of those things. So having the standards and communicate, it's on us to communicate them well in advance. Now, dysfunctional relationships seek dysfunctionality in relationships because they don't know the difference. And so whenever you're going to make it, like they're coming in here and you're functioning here, their goal, for example, is when you're engaging them, you want to pull them up, but their goal is to pull you down in that sense. So you have to have amazing boundaries that says you're going to step up to a level of functionality. And for a season, I'm going to try to coach you along, but if you don't step up, then we're going to discuss them and have a discuss transitions. And so I've said some pretty hard stuff to my students before. And try not to make it an issue of character with them. Because, for example, there was an argument we saw on tape once. My wife, of course, being a therapist, we do marriage seminars together, and we saw a tape of an argument. And someone said, he doesn't take out the trash, and he's just so lazy. Now, those are two different statements. One is a task, and the other is a character. So in those kind of moments, are they equipped to carry out the task that you're giving them? Have you done your part to equip them and train them? And in not carrying out the task, you know, sitting down with them and asking them, where are you right now? What's going on there? And if you have and all that, then yeah, you can say, I'm sorry it didn't work out. This is just not a good fit for you. I wish you well, and you need to go. And bad news needs to travel fast. That's a Bill Gates quote. Find it in First Hesitations, I guess, in the Bible. I don't know. But bad news is to travel fast. And I tell my students, I said, if you and I come into conflict with each other, you're going to know fast. Because I'm not going to let it sit out there and marinate. Good news can marinate. Good news can get out there and kind of wander around, and it can be lower on your priority level. But bad news needs to hit them fast, and needs to hit them hard, and with a lot of love. And so I've told students they can't come around anymore. And when that happens, I've told them, and if you come around, we'll call the police. So you just need to know how to succeed and how to fail. And I do that with our leaders as well. Being very clear up front. But yeah, this is a group they don't want. I say this as standing on a stage. Tim Elmore is very popular about saying they don't want a sage on a stage. They want someone in their life, a life coach. My wife is a therapist. It's all about boundaries and separation. You don't talk outside of the classroom. My life is all about closeness. Get close, get into each other's lives, experience life in front of us. There's a reason why students want to see your selfies eating a hamburger with your kids, because they're from such dysfunctional families. It's nice to know that that happens. The families can get together and do that. A turning point for one of our students in Oklahoma, my wife sat down and said, hey, Jamie, something came up today. Can you pick up the kids? And I pull out my calendar, which was on a different kind of phone. We didn't have an iPhone at the time. And I pulled it up, and we were like, I said, okay, yeah, I can do that. When can you be home? Okay, we'll need to switch and do that. Done. For us, and the student sitting there said, that's amazing. I said, what are you talking about? And she said, I've never seen a disagreement between two married people that didn't end in screaming. And so my wife and I just kind of stared at each other, and we're like, okay, that's where we are. So I don't know if that's a point or whatever, but any other questions?
I hear no. Commonly called Generation X, Generation Y, Generation Z. Mm-hmm. What's next?
I don't know. I have no idea, because Generation Z, I think, is working on 4-year-olds right now. And that's in that area, so I have no idea. I try to watch the youth group coming through, because I know I've got them in a little bit. And I'm very interested to seeing what comes around, because one of the things I am very encouraged with in this area is I'm seeing more African-American families and African-American students who are achieving more, working harder, and with a lot of work there. And so I have about a 60% leadership team of African-Americans. And our worship on Tuesday nights is about 70% African-American. So we switched to gospel. I've never done gospel before, but I can tell you they don't know David Crowder. So BB and CC Winans, I don't know them, but you know, might as well. And so they, we as a leader, it's incumbent upon me to change as well. And so, matter of fact, one of my team leaders for the teams this summer, he told me, like we were talking about marriage, and because he came from a broken home and all that, he said, "Oh, I'm not getting married unless I'm convinced that I can stay in the picture forever." And I said, "That's the stuff right there." So, yeah.
Just a comment. You know, I hear a lot in the different leadership seminars and such that talk about how to manage all these different generation clashes. Well, recently, I heard one that came out. He's got his studies too, but it was a complete opposite. He says you don't need to manage for each of these generations. He says most people, and I thought it was really, really interesting the way you said it, is that this generation doesn't want you to think that you got them figured out. Mm-hmm. And he said, don't do it that way. He says everybody's an individual. They're all different. They've got their personal experiences and that kind of thing. So just manage people as people, which I've heard you say that too. But
yeah.
It was real interesting that this guy just tore down all the generational labels and said, hey, don't lose sight of it. You start setting up your business for this generation. Not only will you offend that generation, but then you offend everybody else who's not in that generation.
I agree with that. That's kind of how we do it, because I fit, while I'm a Gen X, I fit the traditional mindset because I'm from a farm. And I was not raised working at Burger King or anything like that. I was by myself swinging an axe most of the time and driving tractors and stuff. And a lot of these students are. A great thing about our area is a lot of these kids grew up crawfishing and those kind of things. And they know what all that is. And they don't fit any one set thing. But you're absolutely right. When they come in, learn them and manage them. And I tell you, one of the best chaplains at a university, because I try to go in and I learn teams and figure out who's the best fit for these. One of my goals is to have a pastor chaplain for every sports team on campus. And one of the best chaplains I've ever had was an 85-year-old man on the basketball team. I wouldn't have guessed that. And he was a coach for the Army team in Vietnam. And so he comes in there, and the team will not take the court without rubbing his head going out the door. And he loves it, you know. So it's just one of those crazy things. He became their good luck charm. And so after that first 2 years of doing it, I sat down with the coach. I said, do you need to make a change? He said, I will fight you tooth and nail if you take Brother Bill from us. I was like, good. We're all good. And so I need some of those guys at LSUA, by the way. So if you feel that you want to impact young college students in the sport and also get free tickets to all the sports stuff, I'd love to have you. Yes?
Just for information, are you employed by Louisiana Baptist or LSUA or some combination thereof?
That's a great question. I am employed by the Louisiana Baptist Convention. And at LSU, we are our budget is provided by associations and churches. And so now I do occasionally teach adjunct classes for LSUA, but we have no restrictions on our abilities to teach and share our faith openly. I don't, because they know what I am. But I work cooperatively with the faculty.
Your role then, it must be similar to what used to be called BSU, right?
Yes. That's exactly what it is. BSU, BS Ministries sounded bad. And then, so it turned into Baptist Collegiate. And also, high school students kept showing up to our stuff. So they switched to Baptist Collegiate. In Texas, it's Baptist Student Ministries, that kind of stuff. We have been around for 99 years. 1919 is when we came into existence. So next year's our centennial. And no one seems to know because we're all college students, college directors. Anything else? Because I think we're coming to an end here. It's 1:00. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you.